This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's after show. A lot to get through today. Before we get into it, I want to thank everyone listening to this show who supported the bushfire relief, the Australian Influencers Bushfire Fundraiser, and they hit over $500,000.
Right.
So all the Australian influencers that promoted that and really pushed that GoFundMe page, that's pretty incredible. I actually wasn't privy to the fact that it was one of the smaller fundraisers. Mm. Apparently some hit 20, 30 million or something.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the Facebook group crowd or something to do with it, but it has like this crazy viral effect.
Okay.
And some people raised a lot, particularly some of the animal ones, which is great.
So, yeah, thank you guys for doing that. Anyone who donated any money is very generous of you. And I don't know the status of the fires right now. I don't think it's getting... I think the worst is kind of behind us. I think it's getting a little bit more under control. I was searching the fire map the other day and just kind of clicking on the different spots. And they're all starting to say, you know, under control or fully controlled or working on containment. Not out of control.
Well, I think so much of it has just already been burnt.
Yeah. It's running out of fuel, but there's still a lot left to burn.
Yeah.
Yeah, still a lot left. A lot left is really close to Sydney as well, so closer to us. We've been fortunately unaffected, but there have been some of our fellow CrossFit gyms have been affected. Raph, can you read off some of the... So one of our good friends of the show, Darren, has got himself involved in this... it's a workout for... bushfire relief. I'm not sure the exact details, which we're actually going to find now, but it's something like the workout is like 24 burpees for how many people have died. It's 38, I don't know, box jumps.
Here
or
we
something.
Go. 28 minute AMRAP, which is the number of people recorded missing at the time of publishing the workout.
Yeah.
It looked to be around a week ago.
Yeah.
23 burpees, number of lives lost at the time of publishing the workout, and 48 body weight squats, hottest temperature recorded in Sydney during the fires.
Mm. And so how can people support that?
So
what are the details?
So you need to go to, really it's just this Facebook group. So there's a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups, CrossFitters for Bushfire Relief. And everything is there, like all the updates, the Wildlife Rescue Organization where the money grows, the Red Cross, obviously where money goes as well. And there's recommended donations of like 25 Aussie or 50 Aussie or 250. And you can also just, you don't have to like handle the money if you're like setting up the workout at your gym. You can all go straight to the charities.
So one more time, where can they find it?
So the Facebook group is the best place to go. So CrossFitters for Bushfire Relief.
Awesome. Fantastic. Guys, go check that out. All right. So this week I wanted to talk about my experience and you want to talk about your experience with working against gravity, the tracking using the app. So as you guys know, we signed on with Mike and Adi's company, Working Against Gravity for Nutrition Coaching. And I actually started, so if you do read the daily email, if you don't, I highly recommend getting on it. There's me confessing my deepest, darkest secrets and insecurities. It's just like a rambling from the toilet seat every morning. So you can check that out. The link's in the description of this episode. But anyway, I'm on the daily email and I'm telling people about my experience, my learnings from coaching. Actually, I did post it in on Instagram on one of my posts, and I was just kind of telling people that tracking, almost just the act of tracking itself, is a massive teacher about your nutrition and does get you to change or does inspire you, motivate you to make changes already or bring awareness to areas that you need to get focused on. And I hate people saying that, and I think we've answered a question on this before. I just hate people saying that tracking is like somehow unhealthy. It's like a bad behavior that's going to cause eating disorders and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we looked in, there's like studies on this and it doesn't cause eating disorders. It's like people that have an eating disorder, then they start tracking, it can make an eating disorder worse.
Yeah.
But for most people, like, yeah, they did the studies, they tracked them, people didn't develop eating disorders. Like the idea you open the app and you have an eating disorder, it's not that powerful.
Yeah. It's like near EL. He was saying that, you know, we were saying, oh, you know, phones cause a lot of depression and anxiety and stuff these days. And he goes, no, they're just a symptom of people who are feeling anxious and depressed. 100%. And their phone is just a crutch for that, which
like,
makes sense.
People are always like, oh, you know, the phone is like cocaine. It's like so hard to get off. And I haven't done cocaine regularly, but I'm like, cocaine must not be that hard to get off. Because it's not that hard to just, you know, go on a holiday and then put the phone away for a couple of days. Like you miss it a little bit, but it's not that bad.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd need to check into rehab for it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely not as expensive as doing cocaine on a daily
basis. iPhones are expensive.
They're not that expensive. So, my experience with tracking so far, I wrote down the five things that kind of showed up for me in the tracking. And even just from that,
how long has it been since you tracked?
I think I'm tracking my fifth day at the moment. Yeah, so since we got it. So the first one was I consume my entire daily fat allowance before midday. So the interesting thing about that is that what it shows me is obviously these foods that I'm having in the morning are very fat heavy. So like a simple change would be to go, okay, what are the most high fat foods in the morning and how can I kind of spread that out through the rest of the day, or what can I cut out there and then add it in later? Or just, you know, try to eat a little bit less fat and just go for low fat the rest of the day. So kind of just an interesting balance there, because now, you know, with that information, you can take it either way, right? You have the flexibility to kind of move those things around, which I love. Second one was fats are always the most easy to overconsume. That's a macro that I've found the hardest to go under, obviously, from that first point. Third, the carbs are the hardest to overconsume. My carbohydrate limit is set to 300 in the app, but I haven't even, I think the highest day I got was 280. So I haven't even overconsumed carbs, let alone even hit it. So the fourth one I have is heavily processed foods. So I wrote, like, for example, that won't be supplements, or like when you go to the petrol station and you just like pick up a snack or something like that. So stuff that can sit on the shelf for like a year. That makes up 15 to 20% of my daily calories, which is probably what I would say for most clients would be the limit. But it was still interesting to kind of see that. And then the fifth point is kind of unrelated, but I said I hate recording and reporting, because, you know, when you're setting up the Seismic is working against Gravity's app, you know, when you're setting it up and you got to answer different questions like, oh, what do you struggle with nutrition and like are your goals and that sort of thing? And, you know, I didn't want to just kind of tap my way through it, and I just spent some time on the answers. And I really did think about some of the nutrition coaching I've had in the past, and I haven't had heaps. A lot of it has been self-directed. One of the big issues I've had is I do always adhere to programs, but I very often underreport. And even that's what I found with training, especially. I always do the program, but I just don't like putting it in. And so my coach was like, hey, I want you to make a big effort with reporting. He goes, it's your weakness, but we don't need to report for forever, but I need to like be on top of what you're doing in the beginning. And I thought that was kind of a bit of an eye opener for me. Not that you can, I can, because the thing is, you can still get results without reporting. But it does, because that's what I always thought. I'm like, it doesn't matter because I'm still doing it. But what it actually does, it inhibits your coach from being able to give you better feedback or create better changes. So if I'm really in there for the coaching experience, I'm not there for the macros. And so obviously macros is a part of it, but coaching through macros and being flexible with them is part of it. So that is one thing that I'm really working on, has been really diligent with my reporting. This might be the most days in a row that I've ever tracked on my FitnessPal.
Yeah, I find with tracking, I thought a bit before starting, I was like, I'm going to think about how I'm going to track, how I'm going to do it. Because normally I fall off or I don't like it, because the problem is like, you know, eating is one time you kind of have a break or you talk to people or whatever. And then I would spend like the whole meal, you know, tracking in exactly how much I'm eating.
Right.
And then I'd like go back for seconds and I'd be like getting the scale back out, weighing and measuring and doing everything. And I'd just like spend so much of the meal on my phone just like putting in data, which is like not sustainable and not ideal in the long run. So the way the way I'm going to do it this time is I'm just keeping it all in my notes, and then I sit down on the computer and I smash it all out.
Yeah.
And it's been so much better.
So you tap it in your notes, you weigh it or no?
Yeah. So if I'm, the good thing is I'm doing meal delivery, so that cuts down a lot on how much I actually need to weigh and measure, which is huge. If I had to weigh and measure everything, I would struggle.
Yeah.
Really struggle. So pretty much I only have to weigh and measure dinner.
Okay.
If it's not meal delivery. So it's one meal a day.
Because breakfast is just like two eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the same thing every day. It's like eggs and bars and all like shakes or bars, whatever, like is easy to put in, and it's the same. Meal delivery is the same every day. So it's only dinner. And that is very manageable and actually good for a change, not just like slam crazy amounts of food on your plate, eat whatever. So that's the only meal that I'll have to weigh and measure. And then I just like put it in notes, everything I've done. And then when I sit at the computer and I've got 10 minutes, I can just like slam through it all, do my fitness pal. And I've found, you know, reasons to spend more time on your phone are usually not the best. So being able to knock out the computer has been a much more sustainable way. So if you struggle with my fitness pal, which I have in the past, I would highly recommend it doing that way.
Do you know it's actually World Carnivore Month right now?
Is
January's whole carnival. Yeah. I found out because Joe Rogan put up a post about...
I did see that. He's like going on a carnivore diet.
Did you read his caption?
Yeah.
It was hilarious. Did you laugh out loud?
Yeah, it was like about him being too fat and he's gone on the carnivore diet to like strip down.
No.
It was a different post.
Nah, this one with the steak and...
Oh, no. Okay. My photo was like just all this awesome elk meat.
Nah. Okay, so this is what Joe Rogan said. It's interesting because... another person we know went on the carnivore diet, and they actually reported the same positive things. Now, actually almost identical to all the stuff Joe's describing. So it's interesting, but anyway, this is what he said. He goes, carnivore diet update, the good and the bad. Let's start with the bad. There's really only one bad, and that is diarrhea. I'm not sure diarrhea is an accurate word for it. Like, I don't think a shark is technically a fish. It's a different thing. And with regular diarrhea, I would compare it to a fire you see coming a block or two away. You have time to make an escape. Whereas the carnivore diet is like out of nowhere. The fire is coming through the cracks. Your doorknob is red hot and all hope is lost. I haven't shit my pants yet. But I've come to accept that if I keep going, that this diet is just a matter of time before we lose the battle. And I feel my undies like a rainforest mudslide overtaking a mountain road. It's that bad. It seems to be getting a little better every day, so there's that to look forward to. But as of today, I trust my butthole about as much as I trust a shifty neighbor with a heavy Russian accent that asks a lot of personal questions. The good. Now, I'm well aware of the placebo effect, and I'm constantly self-analyzing every perceived reaction I'm having to only eating meat for almost 2 weeks straight, but the only one thing I'm fairly sure of is that my energy levels are higher and steadier throughout the day. This seems undeniable. I don't know if it's a temporary effect, and if maybe it's just the result of eating really disciplined, but either way, it seems to be real. I've also felt very healthy, in quotation marks, other than the sporadic bouts of hellacious projectile doo-doo. Again, I don't know if this is real or imagined, but I actually seem to feel happier and more balanced. This is the only time in my life I've ever tried eliminating carbs for more than a day or so, and since I've started the diet a couple of days before January now, I'm almost 13 days in, at least 7 pounds lighter, and I'm completely in uncharted territory for me, which makes me think it's probably uncharted territory for 99% of people on Earth. So here's what I gathered from that. Obviously, Joe Rogan is like probably one of the most influential people on the planet, and I'm saying a lot of people are probably trying the carnivore diet, but the same, I think the same window, the same honeymoon window that the carnivore diet has is the same honeymoon period that the keto diet has, the same honeymoon period that the vegan diet has. How many people do you know that start these diets and in that initial 4 weeks they report the same thing? My energy's never felt so good, my bowel movements are clear, like obviously that's not in his case, but yeah, I feel way better, I'm happier, like I'm finally like full all the time, I'm losing weight. Like you hear that, you could put, he could have said that about the vegan diet and I would expect the same caption,
well,
you know?
For a diet to be going well, it's only a subset of things that can be going well.
Right.
So basically no matter what diet you're on, you report the same stuff.
Yeah.
I'm feeling better, I'm looking better.
Yeah. If it's working. Yeah. If it's working, right? So there's always just this, it seems like this changeover honeymoon period that your body goes through when you cut certain foods out and you do feel, if it's good, then you do feel a positive change initially. So I don't think it's necessarily unique to the carnivore diet. I'm sure people have say, oh, I've heard a friend talk about the vegan diet that way, or keto that way, or paleo that way. But it's what really happens after a year, right? What is happening in the long term? Because anyone can do anything for a short period of time. But is something like what he's doing sustainable for? Because if he gets really good results for a month, does he continue or does he keep going, right? So that's really the question. Because if he keeps going, then things, in my opinion, get really interesting. Because I would like to see what happens then. Now, I would say you probably find some issues with the sustainability side of the diet in terms of just... And he talked about on the show is just... It is really hard to eat meat all the time.
Yep.
And food is not as enjoyable as it used to be. And so that's what it comes down to. I mean, you live on this earth for a very short period of time. You really only get, you know... There's a lot of unknown past sort of 30 or 40 as to how your body's going to react. John Berardi wrote a really good post on it. He said something like, you know, these people that are saying that these diets can cure cancer and stuff. He's like, these things are outrageous. Like, they have nothing to do with nutrition. He goes, yes, nutrition can have like a huge impact on a lot of things that we know for sure, like muscle tissue and body fat and like energy levels and that sort of thing. He's like, but to say that it affects cancer is like, he's like, weird. The science on that is so in the air, up in the air, that to make those sort of claims are outrageous. So he's like, don't believe any of that stuff. He's like, you know, eat and expect that you can improve these things. But in terms of like preventing cancer and that sort of stuff, he's like, yeah, we can try our best. But at the end of the day, like, you know, it is what it is. It's going to happen or it's not. So I think that's, yeah, it's just the same idea with any sort of nutritional change.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I must say, whenever you look at these sort of diets, any sort of diet that is just like restricting whole food groups is so much more attractive than a middle ground diet. You know, even just like starting tracking and hitting like moderate macros of like carbs, protein, fat, it's just not that exciting.
No.
You know, no one's getting super excited about a diet when you do that. But as soon as you go like cutting out everything but meat, everyone's like, I'm watching this space. Like, I'm excited.
Yeah. I also know that as soon as you say you can't have something, it's the only thing you want.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you say, oh, you can't have vegetables, it's like, you're going to start craving vegetables. You know what I mean? It's just not a good position to put yourself in. But anyway, that's side note, but it's kind of where we're at with our nutrition at the moment.
Well, I haven't actually spoken to the coach, so I'm not sure exactly what diet I'll be on. Really, I'm using the tracking right now as to actually get a gauge on what I have been eating in the past.
I don't think we're supposed to change our macros yet.
Yeah, no, I haven't. But, he gave me some macros that I can work off.
Yeah.
But I'm just tracking exactly what I'm eating, which has been the same for quite a long period of time. Truth is, it's like within 5-10% of what he gave me on all three.
Because I've just got
in the habit of eating that sort of way, doing strength and conditioning for so long.
Yeah.
But I haven't really decided what I'm going to do with it moving forward. But, I mean, the starting point, that's why you got to track. The starting point is tracking to find out where you're at.
Yeah. So, we've got our check-in tomorrow. So, we both check in tomorrow. And, yeah, that's when we... all our data syncs up from the app, from MyFitnessPal, and that's when we put in our photos again. Yeah, I really like the fact that it makes you keep putting in photos. So, Brad, my coach, will be seeing some pretty jacked and tan figures. Let's wait and see how it goes. Now, give me a little bit of update on how the baby stuff's going. Has anything changed last week? I'm curious. I was listening to some baby stuff because Mike and Adi's podcast.
They announced
into some baby stuff. Have you looked into any of like the early stage nutrition stuff? Obviously, besides
breastfeeding. Well, we're going into the, I think today is the start of the third trimester.
Okay.
And remember, Rhonda Patrick was on Joe Rogan's podcast when she was pregnant.
Oh, yep.
Quite a while ago now.
Yeah.
And she was talking about salmon roe, and basically, like the DHA you get from salmon roe is in a different form to where you get it from salmon. Okay. And that's the type
What's salmon roe?
It's like, you know, though. You remember Finding Nemo?
Yeah.
Like the little orange balls?
Oh, you're talking about caviar.
Yeah, caviar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's salmon roe. It's very expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like way, way better for the developing brain.
Okay.
And she was like going on and on, like, hey, it's like the best thing. So, that's like the main thing we're introducing. But you have to be careful as well because raw fish is like dangerous for moms as well. So, you got to like get really good salmon roe and then you got to freeze it at colder than minus 18 degrees for like 4 days straight. And then you've like killed everything.
Okay.
Then you can reheat it and have the salmon roe. It is crazy expensive, so this kid better be crazy smart and make me the money back. But it's like, I don't know what it is, but it's like $150 a kilo or something.
Yeah,
it's expensive. But it's an investment.
Yeah, okay. And then with the whole breastfeeding and formula, where do you guys sit on that? What's the
best? Breastfeeding is always the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always the best. The thing is, and looking into it, is like people are just so unhealthy these days that so many things that were just commonplace for a very long time, like natural births and everyone being able to breastfeed, now is like a real struggle for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because they're unhealthy.
Right.
They you know, really poor diets.
Right.
They're like deficient in heaps of micronutrients and then they struggle to create breast milk or like they don't bond as well or whatever. All the different factors.
So, health has to do with the bond as well.
Yeah, huge.
Right.
Huge. And then also because, you know, because they're not as healthy, there's, you know, the less healthy you are, the often you'll have more cesareans, so, and then that affects the bonding because it's not coming out through the natural way, it gets pulled away, like there's less skin-to-skin contact after it comes out. So, just like, yeah, poor health, because when they look at like the younger, healthier populations, they're fine.
Yeah.
Like natural births and breastfeeding, it's all like, you know, it's pretty fine. But when you get into like older women, like in their 40s or like unhealthy, like overweight populations, poor diet, everything gets worse.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's an interesting time. And then in terms of the mother getting like supplementation or anything, besides the samurai stuff. It's like vitamin D. Are you trying to ramp up on that?
She's actually on so many supplements. She's a naturopath. It's like folate, iron, I'd imagine, everything.
Yeah, because there's Dr. Stacey Sims has all those recommendations around the menstrual cycle.
You know what? I'll bring in the list next time, but it's not like she brings out like, you know, some pills. It's like a basket. It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen that old video of Ronnie Coleman where he's like, my supplements for the day. And it's like a 15-minute video of all the pills he takes.
You know that? What are those tubes? The funnels? Like, you open the funnel and you just pour fucking
pills like that. Into it? It's like that. It's like so... It's like a 20-minute operation.
And then is her hunger, like, just normal?
Yeah. I looked... That whole, like, eating... Myth, the eating right? for two thing is a huge myth. It's like... I've researched the macros and it's like... it's so little. It's like an extra 250 calories a day.
Oh, okay.
Which is a bit for a girl. You know, it's maybe like 9-10%. But like, yeah, you don't need to be doing like the 5,000 calorie challenge every day at Macca's.
Mm.
Like I'm eating for two. I think there's some bullshit going on.
Okay. As per usual.
I mean, the baby is like 600 grams. How much do you think it needs to eat?
Well, dude, it's going to be strong as fuck, right? That's true. So, yeah. Okay, so should we move on to listener questions?
Yep.
All right. We've got some good ones on the show. Now, we did kind of churn through all our ones on Instagram. So, I pulled some from the daily email. So, some people messaged me in some really interesting questions, actually, based off our daily email or based off my daily email. Now, if you have like questions, some people don't have questions initially, but then I start talking about a topic on the emails and then someone replies back with a question. And that's like a really good way to kind of ask questions. And I don't want to necessarily isolate it just to that conversation with that person. Although I have answered these people directly, I'm still reading them going, oh, this is really interesting. I think the whole listenership would benefit from this. So the first one I've got here is from Dean Stragon.
I don't know. I'm not gonna add.
He goes, hey Lachlan. One thing I always think about, which he goes, I think others would benefit from hearing too, is the difference between eating in a sustainable way and needing to be in a deficit to lose weight. On one hand, being overly restricted with food groups and daily calories isn't sustainable, but neither is being in a deficit forever either. Eventually, you have to make it back to being at a maintenance or a surplus. What do trainers mean when they say you have to eat in a sustainable way to lose weight? Is it food choices and lifestyle, because a deficit isn't sustainable forever? Interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's a good question. I can actually see how the misunderstanding comes about, because I'm definitely guilty of that as well. Be like, oh, you got to eat in a deficit sustainably. And I don't mean like eat in this deficit forever.
Yeah.
Also, you know, part of that is because what is a deficit now will eventually become maintenance for you.
Yes.
Because your obviously weight will come down, everything will come down, how many calories you're burning on a day just regularly. But usually what they're referring to more there is the like how much you're going to restrict and the way you're going to restrict. So like what's not sustainable is like cutting your calories by 30%.
Yeah.
Cutting by 5-10%. That's like a sustainable way to go about the deficit.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're into training and you're into changing your body composition, you don't just do a deficit once in your life and then it's done. Like deficit finished. Now it's just lifetime of bulking. You're going to do multiple deficits. So each time you want to do the deficit, you want to do it in a sustainable way, which is like 5-10%. You know, food groups or just like a relationship with food that is sustainable as well. So that's like not shakes only or some other weird sort of pyramid scheme type diet.
Mm. Yeah, I've always thought that, you know, anything is, you guys know this, anything that is extreme is bad, right? So the more extreme you go on a bulk, the more extreme you go on a cut or a surplus or a deficit, obviously the worse it kind of is for your body, just in terms of the amount of food your gut has to process and the amount of weight you go up and the amount of weight you go down with. And so we always warn people staying away from the extremes. I do think like with obviously the cycles of the seasons on the planet, your body weight is meant to go fluctuate up and down. I think it's stupid to think that you'll just maintain all year round. So I would take advantage of in the colder months when you are like, you know, kind of feel like more filling foods and high calorie foods. Whether there's like a lot of science to support it, I think anecdotally most people will say, you know, in the colder months they find it easier to eat more, probably because your body is trying to heat itself up and stay warm, and so you do that by, you know, through your metabolism. Your metabolism is using food as energy, so your body's asking for more food to keep itself warm. So as you consume more food, I would take advantage of it with your training or with whatever stage you are in, assuming you're not a professional athlete, and you know, try and use this opportunity to gain a little bit more body fat, gain a little bit more weight, but just do it in a very small way. Don't be like, oh, cool, it's winter, now I'm going to add 6 donuts and, you know, a bowl of Cocoa Pops and a large fries to every day, at least 1,000 calories. No, add 250, add 300 calories and do it in a sustainable way, which is just a small change, because then when you want to change back, it's just a small change back. Like when I went into, and I've talked about this, at the end of last year, when I went into the cut, it just started with, the first week was just, okay, reduce the amount of butter that was on my toast. How easy and sustainable is that to do that? Simple. Second.
Depends how much you love butter.
It was tough.
For you, it was about 5 days, so not sustainable.
And then two is like, okay, now cut out that meal that you have with the bread. Cut it to 1 piece of toast. Cut 2 pieces of toast. And there you go, over 6, 7, 8 weeks, that's a 500 calorie deficit, you know, with the amount of butter and the size of the bread that I was using. And so you can see that then if I was to switch back, adding that back in is really easy. So that I see that as sustainable because the swing is small. It's easier to move up a little bit. It's easier to move down a little bit. And that you can do for the rest of your life because you're really only playing with one meal or a little bit of portion size here and there. What's not sustainable is like, oh man, bulking season again, time to add in 1,200 calories to my diet. That is not sustainable. Mm. Yeah, hopefully that makes sense. Okay, second question we've got here is from, you sent me a strange photo, Dominic Ratcliffe. He asks, calves are genetic and can't be grown. Please be true. So that wasn't necessarily a question, but it was an interesting talking point. So I think I was talking about training truths in the email. So I was listing out some truths about training and some myths about training. And I think that maybe he doesn't believe that. Maybe he was just making a joke. But I think there is some, I think there's probably a large percentage of just regular gym goers. A lot of you guys are just regularly training at the gym that probably think that you can't really grow your calves. The calves are largely genetic.
Well, where I think the myth comes from is that it's probably got one of the biggest genetic components of all muscles, if I was to think about it. Like, some people do have really, really big calves
mm-hmm.
that have, like, never worked in the gym, which you don't... You see in other muscles for sure, but you don't see it as much as you probably see it with calves. You know, very rarely someone has, like, bulging biceps and pecs. Like, I've never stepped foot in the gym.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas bulging biceps, which who've never worked out.
Never worked out. Yeah, it's yeah. rare. But you see some people who work out and their mum has bigger calves than them.
Yeah.
It's just a thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It is interesting. But that doesn't really mean that that affects how much you can change your own calves.
No, yeah. Calf tissue is muscle tissue. Mm. It's not like bone tissue or fucking tendons and ligaments. There's a lot of muscle in a calf. You just have to understand the fiber type and, you know, what its job is in the body. And that is how you can train it appropriately and get the best response. So from, you know, the people we've talked about, the experts that we've kind of discussed with over the years, the best protocol to go about training your calves, in terms of, I think there's a lifestyle component to it, which, you know, you can speak about, Raf. I've seen you kind of change your shoes and some of the stuff you're just doing on like a daily basis without any targeted training mm. to them. And then there is the specific protocols that you would train them in the gym. So I'll speak to the specific protocols and Raf can talk about the lifestyle changes. But the biggest mistake I always see with people when they're training calves in the Globo gym, and that, you know, recently training in the Globo gym, I think is the best thing because it gets you out of the echo chamber of the functional fitness, CrossFit sort of industry. And I'm in the echo chamber of like, we all know how to move well, we all snatch, we all do like awesome movement. So the whole fitness industry must be awake. Like, we all must have woken up now. Like, yeah, we're over machines and we're over shitty movement and like weird ideas about connecting to muscles and growing muscle and stuff. No, you go to a regular commercial fitness gym and like no one knows what they're doing. Like, people are still doing the most retarded stuff. And I love it because it just reminds me that, hey, there are still so many people out there that need our help and need our guidance. And we haven't even put a dent in anything just yet. So one thing I see, and the calves just so poorly trained, is just people use the stretch reflex. Now, your Achilles tendon is your most, it's your biggest, most powerful tendon in your body. And like, think what it can do. It can project you up to a basketball ring to slam dunk it. Like, it is so powerful, so elastic. And if you use any of that elastic energy, it's like bouncing out of the bottom of the squat, right? But think about bouncing out of the bottom of the squat and you've got like, you know, a belt on, you've got the thickest knee wraps in, you're in a power suit. Like, you're not using a lot of muscle there, you're just using a lot of tension and stretch reflex. And that is generally how people train their calves. So slow it down. So do a 4 or 5 second eccentric, even longer. Pause at the bottom, pause for at least 4 to 5 seconds so that the stretch reflex, the component, those, that the stretch reflex inside the muscle, without getting too complicated, that essentially will switch off or will inhibit itself and then come up slowly. And that way you'll be using the strength of the muscle. And probably what you'll find is you're really weak. You might not be able to do this with any weight at all. So long eccentric, long pause, and then come up and really squeeze. And you're probably fine with body weight. You're probably only getting somewhere between 5 to 15 reps before you're really hitting failure. So that is the first step. And then when you're training them, kind of outside the gym, Raf, what kind of ideas do you have for it?
Yeah, I was going to add, I think that, you know, it's not only the Globo gym that trains it bad. I reckon in sports and in functional fitness, they get trained really poorly as well. If I think back to both sports I've played, when I played rugby, calves held me back heaps. Like, if I would play one game and I'd sit on the bench and I'd get a start on the next game, so I'd play like more than 80 minutes in a day, every single time I'd have to come off because my calves were cramping. Mm. My calves were weak. Like, it pulled me off the field. It was like, that was always generally the first thing to go. And I had, like, lots of players, and me included, would have, like, pulled calves, just, like, strains through the muscle. And I think there's a host of reasons for that. One is just, like, it's just never training them. But then also, like, rugby boots, stiff calves, everything around that as well. And then I think when I did CrossFit as well, it held me back. Like, high double under workouts, things like that. They used to hold me back. I used to take, like, painkillers for shin splints. At some stages when I was doing CrossFit, so both times they held me back. I'm correcting the wrongs now, because I don't want to hold me back in some of the endurance stuff I'm doing now, but I see it all the time, and most of the time it's just really poor training to the calves, and the only training you're doing is like plyometric work. It's like running and skipping and jumping, and that's it, through like a pretty limited range of motion. So the lifestyle piece to take care of that, which will make a huge difference, is just spending time barefoot, spending time, like, when you're not training, in barefoot shoes, because you just, you know, your calf is going to be in a better position. The heel's not going to be raised. It's not going to be in a shortened position all day. What you'll also find is you just, like, feel the ground a lot more in those type of shoes. So you get a lot more
proprioception.
Proprioception, kinesthetic awareness under the feet. You generally just get more blood flow into that area as well. So you're kind of just training them harder all day. And then when you get in the gym, it's like they're firing on the first set, not like the fourth set.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I've noticed the difference in your calves. And even I think that from an injury perspective as well, and from a strength perspective in your squats and your deadlifts and stuff, it makes a big difference. And most people are just not really giving that the full credit that it deserves.
I think it's part of the reason people struggle with calf flexibility as well. They just have tight and weak calves. And I remember when we even did the gymnastics bodies program, there was a ton of calf work in there. Like, gymnasts train their calves really hard as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then a few people, because in the squat booster, we had calf training in there.
Of course.
People were complaining about some really, really sore calves.
You can get, like, calves can be one of the sorest muscles.
And it's not a fun muscle to be sore, because you're just absolutely wrecked from it. Just absolutely wrecked. You feel it all the time. It's inescapable pain. Okay. Next one is from Grant Sathwaite. What all counts as neat? If I ride my bike to and from work, is that neat, or is it counted as exercise? Neat stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So that is essentially activity that you're doing that is not intentionally exercise. So I would consider a bike.
We've tried to wipe this out as a species.
We're doing our best.
It's been the goal of like bird scooters, Uber Eats. We're trying to just have not a single piece of activity that is not exercise related.
Yeah. I would say like in the terms of biking, if you're biking for the purpose of exercise, for example, like if you're going out a road bike and you're going out of your daily route to, you know, increase the amount of calories you're burning or just like increase your cardio or get better at bike riding, then it's not neat. But if you're just on your way to work and instead of getting in the car, you decide to walk, or instead of walking, you decide to ride a bike, that's neat. That's like just your mode of transportation to the gym. So there are a few ways to increase your neat. The easiest one is just to walk more, is what I found.
Yeah.
Getting steps up.
Man, neat is huge. And I've actually noticed it more since we had the Whoop bands and we've had the, you know, the Whoop group, like the MMP group. Because there's a few people in there I know that go to the gym and are tradies and spend all day on their feet. And it is crazy how much they burn. Like, they'll outdo me in terms of calories burn and activity on a day where I did, you know, 40 minutes of cardio.
Yeah.
They didn't train.
Yeah.
They'll take 40,000 steps walking around all day. Like, if you ride to work or cycle to work or walk or anything like that, it makes like a massive, massive difference to how many calories you're burning in a day. I don't know. It just doesn't get the respect, I guess, because it's not exercise. But it's something you got to take into account. You know, it's an easy way to accelerate fat loss, or if your circumstances change and you just cut all the neat out of your diet or out of your daily regime, very likely you'll have an incremental weight gain.
Yeah. Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing that most people could do to make a difference to their weight is just increase their neat.
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of increasing neat is it doesn't feel tough. There's nothing about it that's mentally straining.
It gives you energy.
It's restoring.
Yeah, it actually gives you energy.
Yeah, so... yeah, I think that if you guys sit a lot during the day, but you know you can't get a lot of steps in, there are other ways to get your knee up. So what you can do is you can bring a band. So you can like do band pull-aparts and stuff. Obviously, if you work from home, it's easy. But if you work at an office, it might look a bit strange if you get up in your suit and you start doing band pull-aparts. But maybe you're just standing more. Mm. Maybe you can't walk, but just stand. Okay, maybe you know, when you take this call next and just take it on your phone, right? Or if you're going to browse your phone for a bit, just stand and scroll through Instagram. Don't sit and scroll through Instagram. So there are just really simple ways to do it. And even if it feels like, hey, this is like the bare minimum that I'm doing, I may as well not do it. You should, because it's actually counting for more than what you think. Mm. So sometimes, like if we did this podcast standing, for example, I don't think that would be a bad thing either. I think that we get a nice groove when we're in sitting. And obviously, there are some benefits to sitting as well. I say when you sit and you do work, you're a little bit more focused. But if you've been sitting for like 6-7 hours all day, it's time to stand up and just, you know, use the muscles in your legs a little bit more. Because that, you know, people that train hard in the gym, they go sit in their chair. We know now, like studies are telling us, they are still considered sedentary. Mm. So NEAT is like it's your secret tool to just keeping your incidental exercise up and your weight down.
Yeah, it makes such a massive difference to your fitness levels. Like people that have high NEAT maintain low resting heart rates and just like better cardio all year round, yeah, like effortlessly. And you even notice when you have a good NEAT, when you actually start training, you get into your training so much quicker and more effectively. Yeah. That's like, you know, if you're just an active person, you barely need a warm up when you get to the gym. If you're super inactive, your whole workout is warming up.
Yeah. That's a really good point. If I'm on my feet all day and then I like go to do a gym, I feel like I'm ready.
Yeah.
Like I don't need a warm up, you know, it's such a big difference. So we did mention Whoop there. If you guys haven't joined the Whoop team yet, we've officially got 60 people on the leaderboard. I'm going to see who is at, as of the recording of this episode, who is sitting at the top of the Whoop charts.
Well, man, I had my biggest day of sleep today on the chart since we got it.
Oh, okay.
So I've been struggling a bit, been around like the 7-hour, 7:00 mark. But I think I hit 8 today and I was like definitely in the top 10 for sleep, which
let's confirm that.
Very challenging to stay in that top 10.
No, you're not in the top 10.
People must have logged on. I had a good day though.
You didn't get 7 hours sleep.
I got like 8. I got over 8.
No, you're 7:09. You talking about today or yesterday?
Today.
No, 7:09. 84% sleep. You're in 23rd. Don't worry, bro. I got way worse. This is devastating. I got 6:45.
Maybe I'll talk about tomorrow. No, today. No, today. I'm at 8:28. Fourth.
What?
Fourth on the leaderboard.
I'm looking at today. Look. Today, you're not up there. You know, not even close. The fuck is going on here? We're stitching this up. Hours of sleep? No, look. Your hour is 6:58. Look at it on the right.
No, that's the average across everyone.
Oh. Okay. But you're not in there. You're down here for me. Look.
I think we're one day apart. That's yesterday for me.
Oh, is that yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe mine's not updated.
Yeah, that's yesterday. Yesterday was 7:09. 23rd.
All right, let me refresh this thing.
But it's a competitive leaderboard. It's a very competitive
leaderboard. Oh, there you are. Yeah, okay. 99%. How'd you get extra sleep? Slept in.
I went to bed early.
Oh, okay. I see. If I go to bed early, I can't sleep.
I had like a number of days of lower sleep, so I knew.
So you were tired.
I was tired.
Yeah, you were tired. So join our team. All right, guys, before we jump into the Netflix review, Raf and I have just got different Netflix shows for you this week that we've been watching. I've got one I'm very excited to talk about, but we have been obviously on the kick with our booster programs. We mentioned that there is some full, complete programs coming up soon. So we're actually in the process of trialing some new technology in which we will be launching our full programs. We've actually got, if you've bought a booster program from us, because you're awesome, then you will be getting an invite to a free trial on this program. A lot of you answered a survey in regards to what sort of program you would want to follow if you did an 8 to 12 week program with us. So we've collected that data and we've designed basically a trial program which people are going to get access to that for free. So if you have bought a booster program for us in the past, you'll get access to this full program. So booster programs are 2 20- to 25-minute add-ons per week, which kind of supplement your current program. But yeah, we will be creating full programs soon. You'll get a free trial of that. In terms of the new boosters, the deadlift booster is out tomorrow. The deadlift booster is out today. So if you go to the link in the description of this episode, themindmuscleproject.com/deadlift, it's 30% off for the month of January. And you guys can jump on the deadlift booster. I'm pretty excited about this one because I'm in all the videos. I wrote the program with the help of one of my coaches at the gym. So we have some awesome stuff in there that you guys will love for the deadlift program. So if you're looking to boost your deadlift, if you know your posterior chain, your hamstrings are a bit of a weakness, and you want to increase your pulling strength off the floor, then I highly recommend picking up this program.
How long are the sessions for deadlift?
Yeah, so the deadlift, just because it is a little bit heavier, yeah. I think that accessory movements, the adding it on may end up being like more like 30 minutes, 2 30-minute sessions a week, but getting good at the deadlift is like...
Takes time, right?
Yeah, and it's just, I think it's one of the most important lifts to get good at, you know, just because it's it's more fundamental, I think, than the squat.
Mm.
You know, squat mobility is important, but deadlift strength, like hinging and just being able to pull things heavy off the ground, it's like such a fundamental movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you guys want to boost your deadlift, the mymuscleproject.com/deadlift. The deadlift booster is out today. So, for the month of January, it's 30% off. You can go check it out. Okay. I got my Netflix documentary. My Netflix series. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. Mine actually is also a series. You've probably seen this a lot. I watched the Kevin Hart. I guess it's like it's basically like reality television. Maybe it's a documentary. But it's like, I think it's 7 episodes. I did skim through parts, but I watched quite a lot of it.
Yeah.
But I got all the way to the end. And it goes through like a pretty crazy year. Like he has like some crazy ups in it, like, you know, selling out stadiums that no one's ever sold out.
Didn't you do this one last week?
No, we didn't get to it as a comedian. But then also he's had times where he like got the Oscars and then they took it away from him because of a whole issue. And like he's had some low points, like a massive argument where he just like abuses his physical trainer on a plane. Which is pretty funny. So it like follows those up and downs kind of in a reality television show. It's pretty interesting just because his life is so crazy. It's kind of an insight into like how I guess a company like that operates. He's kind of got this like close knit of boys. Like I think a lot of these people have that follow
from
him around.
From like his old life?
Yeah,
like,
kind of more from the beginning.
Day one.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the big controversy, and then everybody knows this, but like there's kind of one of them who's kind of in there that like potentially backfire. I think the court case is still going, but backstabbed him.
Oh yeah.
Which is when he got caught cheating while his wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
Was like trying to make money out of it. So he's like very protective.
Oh, his mate like caught him and tried to blackmail him.
Yeah. Well, I think like filmed it on purpose.
Oh, fuck.
To make a lot of money. But it's like, I think it's still in a court case. So they couldn't even in the show. They didn't even actually say his name.
Fuck.
So, yeah.
I don't know who's worse in that situation. The fact that he cheated or the fact that he filmed and tried to blackmail him.
It's kind of a bit of a lose-lose. Yeah. So, anyway, I think it is quite interesting, but it definitely could have been like 2 or 3 episodes. And like a lot of Netflix things these days, they stretch it out to like 7 or 8 hours of viewing time. But if you're into that sort of stuff, like the life of celebrities, I mean, it's cool because he's bringing fitness to like comedy, which has just not been big in fitness. He's the first ever comedian sponsored by Nike.
Yep.
And something about this, the fact that he's black makes it look like an athlete because like running down the road, he's got his mad trainer. He's got a full-time trainer. Obviously, this guy is just like, he's just a savage. Like they're like filming him. It's like 6 a.m. in the morning. His trainer's like, yeah, you know, I love getting up early because like, you know, everyone else is sleeping in. It gives me the head start. And he's like, yeah, why are you yapping away then? Let's get to the gym. That's his attitude. Like, they get in, he's had like 2 hours sleep, and the guy's like, I'm front squatting since like 1 a.m. this morning.
Jesus.
So he's got a really savage trainer. It looks terrifying. So I check it out.
Yeah. What do you give it out of 5?
Oh, just because they stretched it out and made me sit there for way longer than I wanted to, 3.5 out of 5.
Oh, that's still good. Okay. So what I have for you is, now they were pushing this one hard in my algorithm because season 2 is coming out. I believe season 2 comes out today. No, the 17th. What's today? So in like 3 days. It's called Sex Education. Now I actually watched the first episode of this.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah.
You have seen
it? No, I haven't watched it. They've been pumping it to me.
Because the season 2 is coming out. I actually did watch like 20 minutes of the first episode when it very first came out. But for some reason, it just didn't land with me at the time, so I ignored it. But I ended up during the holidays just watching it and kind of finishing off the season just recently. And it's really good. It's about this... so, it's an English... they're English. So, English film. So, what do you call it? It's not a Hollywood film. So, it's cool. It's like a nice change-up from like a American setting to an English setting. And it's basically about like this really sexually awkward teenager... named Otis, who's like really struggling with his mum's like a sex therapist, and so but he's like really sexually repressed and awkward, and like he can't masturbate and he can't touch himself, and it's like really hilarious, great acting, and he's got like this gay friend. But what it's so good at doing is making you feel like you're back at high school again, because it's bringing up all the awkward kind of like teenage stuff that you go through, and you know, being a loser and being cool and wanting to hang out with the cool people, and you know, people that are gay, not being sure of themselves and doing weird things. And it's just hilarious because it just reminds you so much of your high school experience, and so it's kind of like nostalgic watching it, and you just can't help but laugh. And man, I tell you what, there hasn't been a sitcom which is not necessarily like the main focus isn't to be funny that I've laughed this hard at in a while. You know, when I laugh really hard, I know I'm going in to watch either stand-up comedy or like a you know, like a Pineapple Express or something, or a Superbad, like a movie that's like designed purely for the laughs. And this isn't sort of designed purely for the laughs. It is a really good story and narrative, but it has some funny bits along the way. And it's just, it's so good. You watch it and it's like, ah, this is what it was like being back at high school. So very excited for the second season. They've done it really well. The actors they've chosen, they're absolutely killing it. So Sex Education Season 1, I'm going to give it a... I actually would have, if I just watched one episode, I probably would have given it a 3, but by the end of it, 4 out of 5.
Are you going to watch the next season?
100%. Yeah, at 4 out of 5, dude, that's guaranteed second season. Yeah.
So. I don't know if you agree, but Netflix has been, I think it's the time of year, but it's been weak recently.
Weak?
Like, I think there's been like less good stuff coming on there. I think it's the time of year thing and they're going to like bring it back hard.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I know that obviously Australia doesn't get as many good series as the US. And so I think if we're in the US... You wouldn't be saying that, but yeah, it hasn't been fantastic. Mm. That's for sure. But we'll see. We'll see. This, I know this time of year is big for movies.
Yeah,
it's very big for movies in Hollywood. All right, so there it is, guys. Hopefully, we answered some cool questions for you. Got some stuff out of it. Go watch those documentaries and those movies. And yeah, you can pick up the Deadlift Booster Program, mymuscleproject.com/deadlifts, 30% off till the end of January. So don't miss that. And all the sponsors and stuff in the description of this episode. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.